a show now called The Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and stories, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com. By the extraordinary Mike Bone, called Thank You, Vladimir, then a tune by the deeply missed Solomon Burke, None of Us Are Free. Then we'll hear a short selection from a play called Rapunzel Alone, just finishing its run at the Wallace in Beverly Hills. It'll be continuing at the 24th Street Theater starting April 9th in the historic West Adams District. And then an extended interview with the cast of Rapunzel Alone. It was my privilege to get them between shows at the Wallace.
This all happened a long while ago now. To be clear, this is not how it began. But it's the first Letty knew of it. She was in her bed. Ray's voices through the wall. Her parents' voices.
It's not safe! You know it isn't safe.
Nowhere is safe.
That isn't true. You know that isn't true. There are places that are safer than here. Much safer.
She is just a little girl.
If it hits, when it hits, this is where it will hit.
I'll take care of her.
You can't. You can't protect her from this. You can't. It's too big.
There's a deep silence. Her father is not speaking. She supposes that it's all because of the war. That's where it had begun. And as it was called a world war, there's nowhere that is safe from it. Not one single solitary spot on the planet. A few nights later, she's with her father. High up on the flat roof of their building, high above the city, her father was a fire watcher.
You know you shouldn't be up here, Letty.
Oh, I know.
But I brought you up here to show you something and to tell you something.
What? It's dark. I can't see anything.
Right, the blackout. Everyone's turned out their lights and covered their windows.
To keep safe.
That's right, safe. Everyone's staying in. The city's in hiding, so the bombers can't find it. And one day, when this is all over, everyone will pour out into the streets and all the lights will come on again. All the lights all over the city. I'll bring you up here to see them. But, listen. You hear?
Yes.
You know what it is?
It's the bombers.
That's right. He'll be here soon. Hey! You! Put out that light! don't cover your ears. Listen, Jay. You must listen to me while you still can. You know what the siren means, huh?
Yes.
Tell me. Tell me, Lee.
The bombs. The bombs will start dropping.
And what will people do?
They'll run down into the basements and the tube stations. Dad, I'm scared.
And me and your mum?
I'm scared.
Me and your mum, Letty, what will we do?
Mum will drive the ambulances and you'll put out the fires.
That's right. Right, come on, Letty. Come on, give me your hand. Down to the shop. No, use the stairs. This is what I've got to tell you. It's not safe for you to be here in the city. People black out their windows, but blackout curtains can't stop bombs. It lessens the odds, but won't stop a bomb. It's just not safe. Me and your mum are doing our bit. And now it's time for you to do yours. See?
What can I do, Dad? I don't know what I can do.
Well, you've got to go away.
Away?
Out of the city, to the countryside, it'll be lovely.
On my own?
Well, there'll be other children. Lots of other children, it's not just you. You'll be safe there, and we can get on with keeping people safe here. We won't worry about you. You understand?
It's March 19th, 2022. I am at the Lawless Theater in Beverly Hills with the cast of Rapunzel Alone, the 24th Street Theater production. And why don't we just go around quickly and introduce who we are. Jay?
Hey, Peter. I'm Jay McAdams, and I'm the producer of the show.
I'm Debbie Devine, and I'm the artistic director of 24th Street Theater, and really proud to have directed Rapunzel Alone for 24th Street Theater.
Hi. I'm Marie-Francoise Theodore, and I play Miss Pierce in Rapunzel Alone.
Yeah, I'm William Leon, and I play Conrad in Rapunzel Alone.
I was particularly impressed with two things about the production. One, it's kind of billed as children's theater, but it's very intense and compelling and really good adult theater. Any comments about that?
Mm-hmm, that's what we do. we basically do children's theater for adults, basically, because our whole thing is about introducing young audiences to really sophisticated work, so they don't feel talked down to. So they, you know, so they reach up. So that's been our whole model for nearly three decades now.
And Peter, you saw it. So did it reach the child in you?
He's up front most of the time. It's like trying to get the adult to appear more often. Seriously.
Did we pull the grown-up out of you?
Yeah. We pulled the grown-up out of you.
I felt like crying about half a dozen times.
Oh, so that's great.
I suck it up so I don't look too old.
Well, that's really...
So
that's
the kids
really
don't mock you.
Exactly. The other thing I noticed was, and this is a question between acting and directing, there was a lot of emotional intensity, but it didn't get overblown. It didn't get carried away. I mean, the actress clearly went into very deep places of themselves. It was handled gently, and so often theater and films, they just want to like stick your face in emotion and feel this and feel this, but there was that intensity, but it was quiet in a way, and I really appreciated that.
One of the things that we worked on, and both of these wonderful artists will tell you that, is that we celebrated Brits as a culture, the British culture. And the British culture, because this takes place in 1944 in England, is very removed from their emotions. They're cerebral in many ways. And so we use that cultural trait, I think, and it sounds like, from your reaction and critique, that it worked to make sure that we were landing those emotional moments, but not hammering them.
Well, one of the most famous film directors, I won't say his name, Spielberg. I tend to not like his films because it's like the audience needs to be dignified. Yes, we can come to conclusions and figure it out.
And that's what we feel about children. Whether you're, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 year olds, how mature they are, how they can handle these themes. So that's the most important thing for us, to have that respect for the child who is so much more developed than we give them credit for. I mean, they're able to, children are able to make morality decisions at 6 months. We've known this from psychology studies. So if they can make morality decisions at 6 months, who's the baddie and who's the goodie, then we know that they can come to theater at 6 years old, at 7 years old, mm-hmm. and understand and be part of a story and celebrate what they understand. And as Jay said, what they don't understand, it's something to talk about later.
Well, Debbie, let me ask you, with Oscar season coming up, How do we know if the actors did a good job or the director did?
Oh, it's all the director. Absolutely. Oh,
okay. The actors might argue that, but every director will answer that.
It's a collaboration, especially in theater. It's a collaboration. It's not just the wonderful actors that you collaborate with, but it's the designers. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a goose puppet, and that was brilliantly built. And we have a media designer and a composer and a, you know, sound designers. This is all of us together making this story.
Very collaborative.
Very collaborative.
And what you were just saying a moment ago, some of the traditional children's stories from Grimm, say, who wrote Rapunzel, this play is not exactly the same as the original one, but there's some archetypes that are similar.
Right.
Some of those old children's stories are scary. They're very frightening.
They're brutal.
Hansel and Gretel.
Right.
Children are stuck in an oven and
birds pecking eyes out. I mean, it's horrible.
That's right.
And children love monsters.
They do. Those were written and of course those were all oral tales that were told, and then the Grimm brothers just copied, you know, recorded, transcribed what it is they heard. But it was, they were cautionary tales so that, you know, kids wouldn't wander away from home or talk to strangers or, you know, the things that they didn't want them to do. But this was, for us, this story, an original story, this story really is about love and tolerance and understanding and connection. That the isolation is such an agony. And in this story, 1944 England, where kids were being evacuated because of the bombing, that isolation, what it leads to and how it can impact your psyche, and how connection between your character as well, your character is isolated.
Miss Pierce.
Yes. Miss Pierce, what happens when she comes into your world?
Well, I think, like, Miss Pierce's journey is kind of the inverse of Letty's journey. So
the Letty is the young woman who gets shipped off to the countryside.
Right. And I take her in, but I expected a boy. I expected someone to help me with my farm. And instead I get this very kind of young girl who doesn't know anything, who's afraid of her own shadow and can do nothing. She knows nothing. And so I have to come more out of my shell. You know, I have to open. Letty is already very open, but she's just in an unfamiliar place. I'm in a familiar place, but I've made it so familiar, I'm afraid to venture out. Mm-hmm. I don't want to meet any new people. I'm just comfortable with my animals. But that's not life. Life comes and gets you, even if you think you're gonna hide away from it. Something will happen to shift. And that's what happens in Mrs. Pierce's life. She thinks she doesn't get
Miss
what she
Pierce
wants.
To you.
Yes, Miss Pierce. Miss Pierce. I stand corrected. What was I going to say? She doesn't get what she wants, but she gets what she needs.
That's right. That's right.
She really needed someone like Letty in her life. She needed something.
And we know from the storytelling, from the narrator, that her life is so much better after that.
Oh, yeah.
That she has friendship.
Well, all of them.
Yeah.
Their lives.
Oh, did we just give that away? Cut that up.
Well, they all have wonderful journeys, actually, which is what I love. Yeah. Which is what makes it, I mean, you know, a lot of children's stories, there is always this kind of journey, the journey of the orphan. Although she's not technically an orphan, she feels orphaned. Letty does. I mean, they all feel orphaned in some way or the other.
Right. And you're a character that's never had a child, and you become a mother.
Well, like Gertrude had, you know, she's my alter ego.
Right.
And she becomes
the goose.
A parent, too.
The goose, yeah.
She becomes a parent. And I become a parent, and we have to learn how to be parents.
Right, right.
And you can't quite be quite as harsh. You have to slow down.
And that's a really, you know, just thinking about that right now, I hadn't thought about that before, how Gertrude's number one job is to keep those goslings safe.
Exactly.
And that's your number one job, is to keep that kid safe.
Yeah. I take that responsibility very seriously.
So seriously.
But I won't let her out.
You won't let her out. Which is the Rapunzel trope.
Right.
Right.
I let her go, mail a letter, and that's it.
You're right. That's right.
And I expect her to come right back.
Right.
No talking, no interacting. You have to just be here with me.
That's right.
But that's my way of protecting, which is just, you know, overbearing in the beginning.
There's something about your acting, and I think actors in general, that has to be very fearless, courageous, in the sense that the thing that we want to do most of the time is have people like us in real life. But on stage, you have to be willing to get up there and have people not like you. Mm-hmm. And you are a rather fierce character, fierce Miss Pierce, although we end up loving all of you at the end. But there's a kind of courage to acting.
Yeah, I suppose so. But I guess when you're seeing it from inside, it doesn't feel that way. Miss Pierce doesn't feel like she's not friendly. Well, she kind of doesn't like people like Gertrude, but she doesn't suffer fools gladly if you find yourself to be a pretty decent, smart person. Good. But she doesn't suffer fools gladly. But she doesn't see that as a
deficit. Yeah.
That's maybe right. Other people's view of her, but she doesn't care.
Right. I mean, Iago has to love Iago, right? I mean, you can't hate who you play. You have to have the sympathy and the understanding. Right.
And you're seeing it from your perspective.
Right.
Other people can't see inside of you, so you have a reason.
Right.
I saw Time Daily say in an interview that Mike Nichols told her once, don't judge the character. Be the character, but stop judging her. And she said that one direction freed her as an actor. It just, she got it in that moment. Ah, I don't have to like me. I don't have to be a good person even, this character. I just have to play them without judgment.
If all theater was the happy people from the happy village.
Right. There's no show.
Yes.
You know, you have to start out not liking Miss Pierce. You have to start out not liking that goose. Or there's no story. It's over in the first scene.
And at the end, we see, you know, people are weepy around Gertrude.
Right.
You know, when she says goodbye, Gertrude, and you see a lot of people feeling, you know, poor Gertrude, you know. The goose, she's lost her gosling, you know.
Gertrude is this aggro goose.
Yes.
That's a good description.
Yeah. And so people have to be willing to play the villain on stage. They may be the nicest person in the world.
Totally. Yeah.
Gertrude is not aggro. Gertrude is guarding her territory.
Exactly.
She's doing what she's supposed to do.
That's
see?
Right.
Fair enough.
That's her job. But
In nature.
In nature.
Right.
It's her nature.
Just like a mother's job in nature. Mm-hmm. To protect her children.
I don't know if you can see on the goose puppet, but the puppeteer built it authentically. Goose, we found out that geese have all these teeth. They're like piranhas. A goose mouth looks like a piranha all the teeth. It's horrifying.
It has teeth on its tongue.
Oh, they're horrifying.
They're horrifying.
Don't kiss a goose.
Don't kiss a goose. Do never kiss a goose, Peter. You will regret it.
Well, William Leon, you play Conrad.
I do.
And you have to be comfortable starting out as a very bratty young boy.
I know,
A little fearlessness.
Yeah, a little bit of fearlessness. Yeah, I mean, after the show, everyone always comes up to me and say, I did not like you at first, but then, you know, they come to like Conrad. I mean, how could you not? I mean, I'm out there on stage having, you know, such a fun time. You know, Conrad's such a fun and innocent
trying
so hard to be a grown up.
Yeah.
Trying so hard to, impress his dad and his mom and be, you know, the man of the house while his dad's away at war. So it's such a fun character to play, especially the innocence of Conrad, because to be with the character for such a long time, it's nice to be playing a 12-year-old. Especially because I feel like as an actor, you kind of have to keep the child alive in yourself for just any role. But then when I actually get to like play a child, it's like, I mean, it's kind of magical. There's nothing like it. And then getting to do it in a theater in front of a live audience, I mean, it's so fun.
Yeah, it's great to have theater back. I mean, this is the biggest thing we've all experienced. We're in the middle of a pandemic. We didn't know if anybody would show up. They have to come in masks. You know, I mean, what did they say, Jay? This is the second weekend that the Wallace actually had anything live on the stage.
Both theaters going. Well, only the second weekend.
We just dipped our toe in and wondered who was coming to see it. And it's been wonderful to be able to see these audiences and feel them and have them support
people.
Us and hug people. It's been wonderful.
The Wallace is this relatively new venue in Beverly
Hills, used to be a post office, has two theaters in it. It's a really extraordinary new venue for artists.
It really is.
It's a stunning place.
It's a beautiful place, and we're so honored to be. So 24th Street Theater is where this originated. We're 25 years of running that. And then to suddenly have this wonderful collaboration with the Wallace has just been a huge honor. And, let's do some more.
We started this pre-pandemic with the Wallace. So this has been we were originally supposed to do this in 2020, I think, fall of 2020.
Right.
Lost track. But it's been moved about five times because of the pandemic.
So we did an audio version. There's an audio version of it that can be accessed through our website or the Wallace's website. Because we didn't know if we'd ever get it on the stage. So it's really rewarding. Not only did we do the audio version, but then we were able to be on the stage and it's been so well received.
And we did the audio version with actors in London, Atlanta, New York City, and L.A. all on Zoom, well, like Zoom, but on a radio recording kind of app with the sound engineers mixing it and stuff. So, we were literally having to hold for thunderstorms in Atlanta, for sirens in New York City, for, birds in London. It was hilarious.
It was amazing. It's what this technology can do now, that you can... You can create radio, old-time radio, which it is. It's an old-time radio story with 22nd century equipment, right?
Right. And that's Mike Kenny, the playwright, narrating.
Right.
So he recorded that at like 4 in the morning in his closet in England so he didn't wake his wife up, So that's his voice. Narration.
The script, the play is just... Beautifully written. What a talent.
Yeah, he's fabulous. That's why we did a show with him called Walking the Tightrope that was a big hit. Did a 9-city tour, ended up at Center Theater Group. And so we've been wanting to work with him ever since because he's really one of the more thoughtful. It's kind of how you described it a while ago. Slow, thoughtful, real. He's talking real stuff, but in a very poetic,
right,
kind of sweet way.
And the brilliant thing about him is that there's no stage directions at all. It's just his poetry, just his prose. So for a director, that's just a glorious thing because it's whatever the director wants to do. So I was able to conceive of this without him saying, and then she comes through the door, and then,
And then the biggest gift is that because Debbie kind of dramaturged it along with Mike over the course of a couple of years, when we went into production, Debbie said to Mike, okay, look, we got the normal playwright rule, is every word and you don't miss a word. It's like, we're going to change things in rehearsal, so you got to just give me permission to rewrite things or change a line or whatever. And because he's been part of this whole process, he said, sure, great. So we were able to tweak it.
Trust us.
Yeah, as we've gone.
He'd love all this improv you're doing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he'd love that. Because it brings it to life.
Somebody...
Putting on the overalls, I love that.
Oh, somebody did tell me that she loves the... I thought of you. She said she loves the matches and then I blow it out.
Yeah. And you throw it on the floor. What is with your house?
It's a garbage can.
Yeah.
So you were each able to bring a lot to it because of the sparsity of direction that you helped create, and you helped create your part.
Right? Yes.
What I found amazing is, the whole Conrad death scene is not in the script at all.
None of it. None of it. We made it all up. All of the staging.
The death scene, so this is like the climax of the play.
Well, the text is all there. We didn't have the text. It's just, the text is the same.
But all the staging.
But his, the boy acting it out and doing all that.
That
business is added.
Moving.
Right.
Very moving. And again, quiet in a sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people that, we've had a few people that have said, oh my God, the pacing, it's so slow. In our last show, that Walking the Tightrope piece, there were probably scenes that were 60 seconds long with no text, just watching a character sit on a beach. We don't, foreign films do that, but American films rarely. And it's kind of the same with theater.
You talked earlier about Peter about taking a risk, and a risk is in the theater is silence.
It's doing nothing for a second.
I love that you sit there. The narration is, they haven't spoken to each other all day, and then you just sit there. And I always think, is Marina gonna ever say anything?
I'm not backstage.
But it's the perfect amount of that builds that tension of not talking. You can feel that they have not spoken.
Right.
I can feel that tension backstage.
I know, it's great.
And I'm like,
it's great. Oh no, it's here.
Because just like playing along. Just like them playing a little tight rope. I wish she was doing
it's her,
being
that's a
12-year-old girl.
That's a risk to be quiet, to be still.
I think a lot of the power of your character, Marie-Françoise, is your silence. And the standards you're holding Letty to. We've all had that mentor, that teacher, that demands that we step up.
Right.
And so there's this coming of age tale. And well, what are some of the other archetypes that you feel particularly relating to the original Rapunzel?
The hair. The hair, cutting the hair is very much part of that. You know, that gives her, initially, it gives her power, right? Mm-hmm. She just doesn't ask whether you want your hair cut. You just do it. Yeah. So that's, you know, cutting of the hair is a huge trope in the original fairy tale. So we knew we had to bring that in.
I like how he weaved it throughout. The whole thing of cutting it, the fact that I don't, that story, how I feel about it, I'm not so keen on listening to it.
Right.
And just, he weaves it really quite, it's woven very beautifully, I think, through the piece.
Right. Where we call, it's a callback. Yeah. And, you know, what is, and then in the end, tell me what it is, and you just say,
rubbish.
It's rubbish.
No, nothing
happens.
No, and then just. Old witch.
She loves up a girl in power.
Right.
Cuts off her hair.
Which is his summation of what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Somebody laughed at that really loudly today. We said it's rubbish. Nothing happens.
I know.
I started laughing. I'm like, oh, they think the same thing. They think about that story. That
was funny. It's great. But it was what was wonderful about doing so. Mike had written a Rapunzel version, you know, of the Grimm, and I read it, and it was children's theater to me, you know, it was the fairy tale, and I contacted him, and I said, the world is so isolated, as Jay talks about, the kids at the time when we were talking about it, the kids were in just deep despair. I want to deal with ice, because what is so powerful about the original story is this girl is in a tower, she's isolated. Can we make this a much more sophisticated story? So we started working on it together.
Interesting. Yeah.
And look how isolation has made us all so nutty.
Yeah.
You know, we had less than 2 years, and most of us were in our homes, and most of us were safe, not like living out in a,
but it impacts, you know, in a so field. Not seeing people.
And we're still, just all off our nut a little bit.
Well, I mean, during the pandemic was the first time I went to therapy. I got a therapist and everything, just because, like,
being on Zoom.
Yeah, I was on Zoom. The whole reason I'm like getting a therapist is because I'm going so freaking crazy. You know,
and what do you think it was? Oh, being by yourself.
I mean, I think it was being by myself. Yeah, I mean, I'm so used to, like, being around people. I mean, that in itself is just sort of, I mean, when you're around people, it's sort of a distraction, but it's just like, you're by yourself for so long, and all
you're social
your
own animals.
Freaking thoughts.
We're social animals, yeah.
Yeah.
Did therapy help?
Therapy did help.
Did doing a play help?
I have to say, yeah.
Right.
Doing a play after this pandemic, and like just being so isolated from everyone. It's funny that we're doing a story of isolation, but now finally doing something that's in front of people, and like I get to be around people so much. I mean, I'm so grateful to be doing this after.
That is therapy, isn't it?
It has actually been the best therapy.
Yes. Yeah.
Really.
For me, too.
We're going to send you a bill.
Well, actors, we have one lead actor, Tara Cox, who plays Letty, the young woman who's not here because she's resting her voice.
A little hoarse today.
Extraordinary, incredible. Marie-Françoise and William Leon, just talk a little about how you're getting into these roles. Because you're so, these are those actual people. That's what I'm thinking as an audience member. Because there was no anybody left but the character. So beautiful job disappearing into these roles with accents. It's kind of complicated accents. Just talk a little about that.
That was a really intense process because I came a little bit later into the process than Will did. I basically had 2 weeks cool. to learn the role. So for a minute there, I think I had a headache for like a week straight, trying to learn lines, trying to learn blocking.
And it's all pantomime. So she's, you're having to coordinate pantomime. Sound design with pantomime.
Yeah, so nothing in my hand.
Right, nothing in your hand. Right.
Then the accent. I on my own, this is part of my process, I did get a dialect coach in the end just to check it for me because I felt I was doing a mishmash, which is what I kind of grew up with because I have Caribbean family and people speak English and French and patois, so I was like, it feels a bit like a mishmash, I need to get it cleaner. So I saw a dialect coach just to get it cleaner, and then I also needed physicality because to me, I couldn't see why she would really need somebody to help her with the farm. But I thought, well, she's been doing it for a long time. You know, your body wears out and the stress. So she wants somebody to help her with the farm. So I felt like it would be good if she had a little bit of infirmity. So that's why she has that arthritic knee.
Well, every time you rub that knee, I rub mine. I mean, I can feel my arthritis because it's really
rub,
there.
Just kind of rub it. Yeah. You know, she rubs it, but she still doesn't. You know, she holds herself to those same exacting standards. So putting all that together, at first it just felt very disjointed. I was just like, I don't know how I'm going to get all this. But then, it's the magic of what we do. Eventually your brain, which I think is first going, what? And it goes,
phew. Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. So I don't know what that is.
And I think also the authenticity of the other artists that you're working with.
Oh, yes, of course.
Because they're so authentic.
Yes.
You can suspend your disbelief so much better, right?
Oh, yeah,
the story is there for you. You've got other authentic actors. I think that's
the foundation was there.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had a great script, great people to play with, mm-hmm. Crew, and the design team is stellar. So all that. So you have to kind of, but that helps you get into the world. It kind of helps. I don't know. There's something that happens. It's like the Big Bang, right? Something that's there's. You're in this phase of trying to get it, and then I don't know. The Big Bang happens, and then you're there.
Mm. You do all the work, you do all the things you can do, and then something lets go, and
you got to do all the work, and then you sort of leave it. You leave the work behind, and somehow it's just once you're out there, it just kind of happens. And for me, I'm I don't know if this is the same for you, but when I'm out there playing Conrad, I'm I can't figure out where my own thoughts as William and Conrad's thoughts, where mine end, where mine start and his ends. It's just everything sort of blends together, and it sort of just becomes Conrad's subconsciously thinking in the scene, and and then once I step off stage, I'm like, man, I really that was really Conrad thinking. I don't even know what was happening.
You know, the other thing that's so interesting about the process that they're both talking about is that it you have to practice it. Mm-hmm. You know, people that saw opening night and are seeing it again, which is I'm so grateful for them to come back, are saying it's a different show because exactly what you're talking about, because you have to practice it. You know, Ethel Barrymore, the very famous from the Barrymore family from the theater, the 20s, 30s, and 40s, she said, critics have never seen me act because they come to opening night. Right? They don't, you're not ready opening night. You're just not
surviving
ready.
It opening night.
Where am I?
You just
what am I supposed
off
to
with
say?
Your life.
Yeah, exactly. You've 5 days of tech. You're just like, okay, let's
go. Right. And then we open. And then so you really have to practice. You know, and these guys have been, they've had about 15 performances, I think. And you can just feel it now. It's just there.
It evolves.
It does. And it's beautiful to watch.
And then you also can enjoy other people, at least I do when I'm not on stage. I can hear you when you're teasing her, and you're going, she's trying to get go, babe, I got something for you. And then you're just such a boy to be so annoying. And then you're really trying to get her attention, but just in such an annoying way, but it's just endearing. Mm-hmm. I think, oh, that's so cute. I love that. So you just are able to just get into the world more, and that just helps. That helps a lot. But it is work. It does take a lot.
But it beats the hell out of TV to me and any film, because you get to do it. You know, it's not stop-start.
Right.
You know, once those lights come up, once that curtain opens...
You get to live in it.
You're in it. You're in.
What's interesting to me, what I was just thinking about, is I work a lot in TV and film, and I feel like in TV and film, usually, like, your first or second take is, like, the best.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel like doing this and being in theater, it's like after you've been with it for like a long, long time, then it like really, right. It's like it ages like fine wine.
It does, because the more you work on it, the more you can add.
Yeah, the more you discover.
And I've found that with writing too. If you write a piece and you just spend one day on it, you're going to get one day's worth of work into it. But if you labor over a piece for a year, you're going to get a lot more connections and details and things you never would have thought of in one day.
It is that investment.
Jane McAdams, tell us about the run at the 24th Street Theater.
So we opened there a couple of weeks ago, and then we finish up here today. This is our last day at the Wallace after 2 weeks. Then we will take a couple of weeks to reload it back into 24th Street, reopen April 9th, and run through the month of April there at 24th and Hoover.
We'll look for a green door.
That's right. That's right. We have a great old, funky old carriage house down at 24th and Hoover. One of the best venues in the city, I think.
And your website, so people can get tickets?
www.24thstreet.org.
Thank you to Jay McAdams, Debbie Devine, William Leon, Marie-Francoise Theodore, the cast and creative team of Rapunzel Alone. Thank you so
Peter.
Much.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.